Talk a little bit about the markets now and how we're doing today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Jason Turner, the Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. NASDAQ's having a nice run, isn't it?
NASDAQ is having a nice run so far today after stocks having a rough week for the balance early start to the week. NASDAQ's up a little over 1.2% right now. S&P 500's up 0.5%, and we're watching the Dow actually right now down about 15 basis points.
But the NASDAQ composite, that's an all-time high then, right?
Yeah, the NASDAQ, let's see if we close up here. A lot of positive news behind earnings season related particularly to technology stocks, driving some hope there in the NASDAQ. And then, of course, with rate expectations weighing heavily on markets all week, the slight pullback we got this morning in Treasury rates, I think we pulled back to 418 on the 10-year at the start of the trading day. That's largely helped put some wind behind the sails of technology stocks, helping out the NASDAQ this morning.
Wonder how much of that NASDAQ is NVIDIA.
A healthy component of the NASDAQ is likely NVIDIA this morning, but it does appear to be fairly broad-based throughout the technology sector.
Well, and that's why I sort of bring this up. I mean, it seems like our discussions here on the Wintrust Business Lunch lately have observe that the markets are more broadly based these days.
They are. We've gone through a long period of these magnificent seven stocks being these overwhelming outperformers in the markets. And we are starting to see, even in technology rallies like this one, evidence that some of the other stocks are at least starting to keep up, if not catch up, with those seven large companies.
And just back to the Dow then, it has hit, 43. And if it's playing with 42 or 41 even, it just seems to me like anything north of 40 is a very large and healthy number for the market. So I'm trying not to be too influenced by or to read too much into what the Dow is doing, even if it's up or down a few hundred points.
I'd agree with that. Keep in mind the Dow's only 30 stocks. And those 30 industrial favored stocks can paint a good picture for the American economy, but an index like the S&P 500 that's more broad based gives us maybe a bigger snapshot of what's going on for stocks more broadly. And as we said, that one's up about 0.5% this morning.
And it's a 6-week winning streak. So a couple of months now, the S&P's been just inching up. What's behind all of this? I mean, forget about the NVIDIAs of the world for a second. Just in general, what does this say about U.S.-based equities?
Well, in general, I think what we have seen comparing U.S. equities to global equities on a go-forward basis, with the health of the American economy pretty firmly entrenched now for the end of the year, U.S. equities look to be the outperformers as we move into the end of the year. Now, longer term, valuations start to matter. Longer-term outlook starts to matter. We start to talk about those election scenarios and what may happen in a post-election economy. Those start to put a lot more uncertainty on U.S. equities and start to paint the picture that international equities may have an environment in 2025 that they could be positioned to outperform.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got Jason Turner on the line. He's the Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Jason, you were just alluding to the political outcome in the next couple weeks here. Do you think the markets already, well, I don't know, interpret for me the markets relative to the upcoming election. What's happening? What will happen?
I think the great takeaway for the markets and the election cycle is markets like certainty. And they don't like uncertainty. And we are in a very uncertain situation with projections for the election. So you're starting to see in markets, and we'll see over the course of the next couple of weeks, a bit of volatility related to that. Today is a good example where you're having rate-sensitive segments of the market do well, those that could benefit from lower rates going forward. There could be a shift. If markets see a shift in polls, that we see other areas of the economy do well as we run up to election. Once we get that certainty, once the markets have seen what the election result is going to be, we'll get a little more consistency in market performance into the end of the year. But to be quite honest with you, we look at history and we can go back for decades with this history. The outcome of the election really doesn't matter for markets. It is time in the markets, not timing the markets, that's going to be your friend over the next couple of months. And the only guaranteed losing strategy that we can see through the historical data is to run away from the markets, be out for the election period, and then come back in later. Staying invested is the right course of action.
Consumer sentiment is really high right now. I wonder what that means.
Well, consumer sentiment has come up for the third month in a row now that we've got the final number in for October on the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index this morning. It's sending a message that consumers are, I would say, resilient. The long run average there on that index is 80. We're sitting just above 70 now, which is a good improvement from where we were in the summer months, but not quite where we would expect to be in a full economic expansion. So the consumer's resilient. They're doing a good job of propping up economic growth on a go-forward basis. They are the linchpin to this soft landing scenario where the Fed is able to pull interest rates down, inflation stays down, and growth stays stable and steady. And right now, the message from the sentiment index is the consumers are prepared to do that and continue to remain resilient.
Is it not higher because of the lingering effects of inflation?
It is to an extent that inflation expectations have come down and consumers have seen strength in the employment markets, which was the big concern at the end of summer, that employment markets were now going to react to these high rates and go have unemployment rates go higher. That stability has led consumers to a higher level of sentiment on a go-forward basis, but it is precarious. This will be a month-to-month observation of does something upset the apple cart of the fairly confident consumers.
But if the consumers were, if their index is moved up a bit, quite a bit, to a little over 70, not as high as 80 where it's been before, one wonders what is elevating their sense of confidence. And is it that, in fact, all of these macroeconomic metrics that we talk about are finally starting to sink in? Or is it because they think Donald Trump is going to win and they think that'll make the economy better, even though pretty much all of the independent arbiters of what the results of the election would be indicate that Donald Trump's tariffs plans would be bad for the consumer? I don't know that message is resonating. I'm wondering if people are sort of looking to November and saying, we think Donald Trump's going to win, and we think that will be good for us. Anything to that, Jason?
I think what consumers are actually looking at is, are rates going to be lower, and can we support larger purchases going forward? And for consumers, that's going to be the real message. Does the Fed continue to cut rates going forward? So we have two things happening that week in November. There's an election on Tuesday, and then there's a Fed rate result on Thursday. And I would argue for the economy, the Fed's decision on Thursday is more impactful than the election decision on Tuesday, unless, as you pointed out, the Trump tariff plan and the immigration plans, if fully implemented and combined, are a worse economic outlook than the fully implemented Harris plans. Reality is neither candidate's going to get the opportunity to implement all of their economic proposals, certainly not within the first several months.
And maybe, I don't know who the people are they survey, but clearly if Trump were to have his way, taxes for businesses and high wage earners would go down. I could see how that would resonate positively with a certain sector of the economy.
Absolutely. And if we start dividing the economy based on economic levels, those are the higher end, the upper end and the high end of the middle. They're doing quite well in the current economy. Those who are on the lower end of that spectrum, they're struggling. And that's why I think the election result, particularly in a number of swing states like Pennsylvania, comes down to inflation expectations. And it's simply a rate of change. If people are looking at the rate of change, and the rate of change has improved from 2022 all the way until now, and it appears to be on path to 2%, that rate of change paints a positive story for the Democrats. On the other side, absolute price levels are higher. Prices went up, they didn't come down, they stayed up, they're inching up at a slower rate. If those absolute price levels are impactful to voters, that is positive for a change in the White House and moving to the Republican Party, both White House and Congress for that matter.
You think we're going to get two rate changes?
I think we will see two actions from the Fed in November and December. Now, if the question is, do I think that's the right action? I don't think so, but I think that's the clear intention of the Fed. It's a 96% probability in futures markets that they do a 25 basis point cut in November, 77% probability we see another 25 basis point cut in December. It's the path the Fed has put us on, and unless we see some significant shift in economic data that moves the Fed from that path, that's probably what we're going to get.
Short answer to this, why don't you like that?
I am a little more worried about inflation reigniting than maybe your average economist. There's a scenario out there where the tail risk, the extreme risk to upside inflation has grown over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Got it. Okay. Jason Turner, Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Wintrustwealth.com to find Jason and company. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for dialing in to WGN Radio. Melissa Hurley's on the line, a vice president with Cable Communications, Inc. here in the Chicago area. And every now and then we like to step back, learn about one of the businesses that's doing business out there. Melissa, today that's you. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well, John. Thank you.
What's Cable Communications, Inc.? What do you all do?
Okay, so we are an electrical and communications contractor located on the south side, West Englewood, small business, family-owned. My mom started it in 1987, and I've been here, working here for several years, probably since 2008, on and off, and then I went back to school, but now I'm here, and this is my home, this is my life, this is my livelihood, this is everything.
Yeah. So it's a family business passed on to you now. I understand what an electrical contractor might be, or at least I think I do, but I don't know what a communications or cable communications contractor does. If you're doing cable, what do you do?
Okay. So, well, when my mom started the business, Sue Hurley, in 1987, this was before Xfinity, Comcast. She worked for a multimedia cable, and we had cable guys. So when technology changed in 1991, she morphed over to the A side, which I'll talk. There's A card electricians and C card electricians, but the A side is more fiber optics, internet.
I see.
You know, all that life safety stuff and things like that. So she moved on with the times, and everyone knew my mom is cable communications, so she kept the name.
So you guys are on the infrastructure side of cable TV.
Yes, we do public work projects.
Yeah, right. And then that's interesting because clearly your mom is female. You are too. Were you outliers or are you still in that?
Nope. We're still in it. She started it in 1987 all by herself. My dad was a carpenter, and what my mom always says is she was in the right place at the right time and knew the right people, and the rest is history.
Yeah, well, but when I say outliers, though, my point is that I'll bet there aren't many women, though, that are in that trade, particularly when your mom started.
Oh, when she started, no, there were not. She definitely forged her way through a lot of different barriers in this construction world that's mostly male-dominated.
Yeah, so what are some of the clients or jobs, then, that you all are working on these days?
We have maintenance. We do maintenance for 24/7 at Midway Airport, and we've had that contract since 2008. We have maintenance at O'Hare T5, and we work on various other public work projects with CPS, CTA, Metro, ComEd, City Hall, Daily Center. Our big project right now is a CTA project we're working on with John Burns Construction.
How many, then, electricians or people do you employ?
We have about 24 electricians and 6 people in the office.
That T5, Terminal 5, has been an ongoing project out at O'Hare. That must have been just talk a little bit about that project.
Yes. Well, we did a little work with a company called SDI. It had to do with fire alarm and card reader access at the airport with the expansion. But the size of our company limits how much work we can do and how much work we actually want to do, because the bigger the job, the bigger the liability. And One thing that I was taught by my mom is stay in your lane. And don't want to get out of your lane. So that means size of jobs.
Yeah.
Because as a small business, you know, we're counting, and public sector work, we're waiting months to get paid on jobs.
Oh, really? Is that typical? Why do you have to wait months to get paid on a job?
That's very typical, and that's probably one of the hardest parts about being a woman-owned small business or disadvantaged business like we are. Because that's, so when the government pays, say, like CTA, then the CTA pays the general contractor, and then it comes down to us. So it's tiered. So it's the industry that I'm in is you've done the work maybe 60 to 90 to even 120 days before you get paid.
Hmm. So as a small business, as a small business, if you don't have money to carry you, even though you've had an outlay for that job and you've had to do payroll, you can't expand too much because you don't have the cash up front. Is that right?
100% correct.
Huh.
Yes. Yes. And believe it or not, it's still very hard as a female to go into a bank and get a loan without a man signing.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yes. Truly, though, I mean, you could prove that to me, huh?
Yes. Yes. It's you know, and it's still to this day, people that know me and my mom and when we're out together and when we talk and if they want to ask more about my mom's history, they automatically assume, so when did you and your husband start it?
Hmm.
It's like, what? We don't need, you know, he had nothing to do with it. It's somebody just asked me the other day, so when did your parents start the business? And I was like, no, my mom. Just my mom. So it's kind of funny that misnomer out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm glad you're reminding us of that. We need to be cognizant of that. About your mom, though. So why did she choose that business? Did she have a background in electrical engineering, or you said your dad was a carpenter? How is it that your mom fell into that trade?
She did not have a background per se. She worked at this company called Multimedia Cable, and at the time there was a lot of changes with the local union 134, and I'm just assuming it's because of how technology changed right at that time in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And she met a business agent with local 134. Who, in so many words, was like, you could do this, Sue. Open your own company.
Yeah,
so
right.
She started off small, and, she worked with a lot of different people that she maintained these wonderful relationships with. And to know my mom is to love my mom. I mean, she's just got that magnetic personality and is such a strong woman and role model that actually not since I've started working here have I realized how strong she is and was, and what she protected me and my sister from knowing a lot of her challenges.
Yeah. We're talking to Melissa Hurley. She's a vice president at Cable Communications here in Chicago. She mentioned about 25, I think, was the number of people out in the field and half a dozen folks in the office. Where do you get your electricians from, and Is it hard to find good employees right now?
Okay, so our electricians. We have grandsons of some people that have worked for my mom, and nephews, and it's a family. That's all. It's a family, and we have pretty much zero turnover with the 25 we have. Hmm. If anything, they retired. Anybody that's left us, they want to stay working for cable, and just because of how my mom just treats people, and we treat our employees, and how important it is to have good relationships with them, and make sure that they understand how much we care about them. They're not just numbers or people out there. They're doing what makes us happen, what we do out there every day. So when they do good work, it reflects good on cable communications. So we really have zero turnover, and right now our workforce is, it's great because it's, we mostly have 30 and 40 year olds, 30 and 40, yeah, 30 and 40 year olds. So that's really good.
You got them for a while then. That's encouraging.
Yeah, they don't
want to
retire. They know exact day they want to retire, and they push it.
Melissa Hurley is with Cable Communications, Inc. It's a longstanding local business in the West Englewood neighborhood of Chicago. Continued success, Melissa. Really interesting to hear your story. I'm glad you had time to tell it.
Okay. Thank you very much, John.
More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based True Value says nearly half of its workforce could be laid off if its acquisition by Do It Best falls through. The company has filed a notice with the state of Illinois that says 900 employees will be laid off at its office in Chicago. The location is home to corporate employees and retail support staff. Do It Best has offered $153 million for True Value, which filed for bankruptcy just ahead of the acquisition announcement. True Value says it has 1,950 employees with about 1,300 in warehouse distribution and manufacturing positions. Airbnb will institute anti-party measures again this year for Halloween. The rules will cover rentals in the U.S. and Canada to reduce the risk of disruptive and unauthorized parties. Airbnb will block certain one-night and two-night reservations over Halloween weekend at booking locations identified as being at higher risk for parties. Last year, 650 people in Illinois were deterred from Halloween bookings because of the anti-party rule. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and it's a Friday, which means it's Mr. Fizz Friday. And Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru, is on the phone. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Steve.
I understand you're going to tell us about the origin of the jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm going to talk about. Actually, you know, Halloween marks the end of the gardening season. And it goes out with a flourish with the yards full of decorations and spooks and goblins and big skeletons, carved pumpkins with candles in them. But where did the name jack-o'-lantern really come from?
Hold that thought, Mr. Fizz, while I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, jack-o'-lanterns, where did that tradition come from?
They originated from an old Irish myth about a fierce blacksmith. The guy was called Stingy Jack, and it said he always was making bargains with the devil. Often he tricked the devil into getting him a last drink at the pub. Last time they bargained, he tricked the devil into making a promise that he wouldn't take his soul when he died. He couldn't end up in hell because of the devil's promise. But because of the dealings with dark powers and the love of strong liquor and so forth, Jack wasn't welcome in heaven either. So the devil sent him out in the dark of the night and gave him only a burning coal to light his way. Jack put this coal in a carved out cabbage root. So the Irish began to call him Jack of the Lantern or Jack-o'-lantern. That's where we got that name, because when the Irish came here, they made lanterns from turnips, but they found out that the pumpkins made perfect jack-o'-lanterns. What fun. So that's the way it's been ever since. But since this is the last weekend of the pumpkin farms, most of them are going to close right after Halloween, so you need to take advantage of the stuff they have for sale. They've got a lot of other stuff besides pumpkins. They have winter squash and onions and potatoes and peppers and veggies at really good prices. By the way, get out and enjoy the beautiful fall color that we finally have now that we've gotten a little bit of moisture.
Yeah, some beautiful colors and some really better than expected weather, too.
Absolutely. You need to enjoy it because this is unusual.
Mr. Fizz, gardening guru Jim Fizzell. On the food calendar, it's National Breadstick Day and it's National Greasy Food Day. Should we be celebrating that? I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Giovanni Labate is the owner of Tiavoli Pizza Bar in suburban Palatine. How did I do on that, Giovanni? Did I get it close?
You got it just right at the end.
Yeah, eventually. What's that name mean? Why do you call it that?
So it's if you didn't know, it's I Love It Backwards.
Well, okay, now I forgive myself for not recognizing the spelling and pronunciation of that. So what, if I hold the name of your restaurant up in a mirror, I'll see what it says?
Exactly. It's just how we feel about pizza.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, by the way. I know that you guys are award-winning, and now there is a world pizza competition in Italy that you're getting ready for. Is that right, Giovanni?
Correct. Yeah, coming April 2025.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So we're going to fly out to Italy and Parma, Italy, and there's a competition every year. It's about 600, 700 people, and it's for one of the biggest competitions in the world.
And how do you have to qualify for that? Was it your 2024 win in California that enabled you to go, or how do you get there?
No, you don't have to qualify. Anybody can actually go and do it. I just won a free trip to get there through the U.S. Pizza team in California by winning their competition in California. But anybody can go to the competition.
I see. Okay, so then you're going to square off against several hundred people, is that right, or different pizzas?
Oh, yeah. You have 700 people, different categories.
Yeah, how does that work? So what kind of pizza or category would you be in then?
So I'm probably going to do gluten-free pizza over there. I'll probably do a classic pizza, and then I'm more likely do a pan division. So I'll probably do three different divisions.
And I guess these are the kinds of pizzas you cook in Palatine as well?
Correct. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that. When I go to your place, what kind of pizza, describe it for me.
Yeah, we're a little different than everybody else around here, which is kind of makes us unique. We're New York artisan pizza. So we're New York inspired pizza, but we know it's a little bit more artisan. We have a little bit more gourmet toppings on it. So that kind of stands us apart from the regular tavern style deep dish that you would see in your around the block.
Okay, so I'm looking at some of your stuff. Sunset in Sonoma and Peach Perfect Pizza. Is that on your menu?
The Peach Perfect was actually on our menu for a Pizza of the Month, and then we saw customers loved it so much that that's the one we actually competed in California, which my wife and I came up with that pizza, and it kind of blew the judges away. Sunset Sonoma was another pizza that we did as a special, and we competed in a different competition in California and won that one as well.
What's your top-selling pizza?
Our namesake pizza, Tivoli.
And so describe that for me.
That one's got like a garlic and roasted garlic and oil sauce. It's got pecorino cheese from Italy, mozzarella, a homemade bacon jam, pepperoni, onions. It's got some oregano, some truffle honey, pepperdew peppers, and then baked to perfection.
Hmm. And is yours a thinner crust or thicker crust?
Yeah, we have both. We normally our thin crust is our go-to, and then we also do a Sicilian style thick crust pizza fried in a pan.
I think we'd be doing this interview a lot better if I had some of the pizza here. So maybe when you get ready to head out next year for this international competition, we'll sample and cheer you on. But it sounds really good, Giovanni.
Thank you. No, it is. It's very good.
Giovanni Labate. Okay, now help me on this, Giovanni. I'm going to say the name of your pizza place again. You ready? Tivoli. Tivoli Pizza Bar in suburban Palatine. And if you don't know how to spell it, it's I love it backwards, tivolipizzabar.com. Good luck and stay in touch, Giovanni. Thank you.
Thank you very much.